It's Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station, WNJC 1360 AM, Washington Township, Philadelphia, broadcasting online, WNJC1360.com, a service of Forsyth Broadcasting.
Up next on WNJC is the Heart to Heart program with Dr. Susan Lorraine.
Stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere beyond the sea. He's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms.
Dr. Susan Lorraine.
Good morning and welcome to Heart to Heart. We have a very special guest this morning. I am just so excited to present Bud Perillo to you. We all know who Bud Perillo is. He is an amazing golfer. He has an amazing history in golf. And we're going to talk with him this morning a little bit about his background and the U.S. Open that is being held at the Marion Country Club this year, 2013. So, good morning, Bud. How are you?
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Bud. Thank you for taking out the time. I know you are a very, very busy man, and I wanted you to tell our listeners, especially those that, you know, may not be real familiar with your background in golf, tell us where this passion came from and how you got started.
Well, golf really had a big part I'll use a real radical term, saving me. I grew up in South Philly in the 50s and the early 60s, and drugs weren't real popular then. It was fighting and violence. Now, it's not the kind of violence you have in the inner cities today where kids are shooting kids, but it was a lot of, let's beat this person up, let's jump this person, let's get in a fight. This street wants to fight that street. And I, about 14 years old, I was so sick of that, so fed up with it for whatever reason, I started watching golf on TV. Now, you have to realize, you gotta picture this. We used to beat people up for wearing white socks. And if you didn't have Cuban heels on and black silk socks, you got you got tuned up. I'm looking at guys with yellow pants, white socks. They walk funny. Their sweaters are every color of the rainbow, and I'm thinking, I got to check this sport out because they probably don't beat each other up. And sure enough, I moved over to Washington Township, 1965. I was 15 years old. I went out, bought clubs, had never hit a golf ball, bought a whole set, and just started playing golf. So I've been golfing in this area since 1965.
Tell us about your professional career.
Well, that was funny. I was playing baseball for Washington Township High School team in 1967. And the coach came to me. His name was Murph, and he said, I'm going to start you. I was a senior, and he said, I'm going to start you in left field. It was the second game of the year. And I said to him, Coach, I got to apologize. I just came in to quit the team. I was just approached by somebody, one of the other sports guys here. The Washington Township is starting a golf team. They want me to play number one. So I played number one for Washington Township that year. At the end of that year, I was hired by a master professional, Charlie Arena. And Charlie said, Bud, I'm going to make you an apprentice. And in those days, you used to serve a five-year apprenticeship in golf, and then you became a PGA professional. Well, I did that, and I went to the business schools, and I worked in golf. I owned a driving range right where the Ford dealership is now on the Black Horse Pike, right next to Walmart. You can see my old driving range. If you go in that first road into the Regal Theater, you'll see a piece of the Ford dealership there, and then a field behind it. That whole lot was my original driving range. From 1973 to 76. In 76, I sold it to Freddie Carter, who was a 76er, Mad Dog Carter. He's a ESPN analyst now.
Okay.
Great guy. And that was my golf career. By 1978, I realized I'm never going to really do what I would want to do in golf, and that's play. I don't play good enough. I'm a good golfer, but nowhere near good enough, and I regained my amateur status.
And where are you now with golfing? Do you play occasionally?
I play 5 days a week. I'll be out on the first tee at Wedgwood at 11:30 this morning, rain or shine. We got a gang of guys that'll play. We play all the time, and it's that's the great thing about golf. Golf you could do forever. I don't know why, whether I was just young and dumb or whatever, but I actually realized that when I was in high school. My father said, you worked all this time playing baseball. You're finally going to start for the high school team. Why would you quit to play golf? And I said, Dad, because golf I can do for the rest of my life. So I'm 63 now. I play five days a week. Baseball, I never would have played baseball beyond
right. They high all school. Have they yeah. all have their time limit.
Yeah,
they have
and
their
that's
seasons.
It. And it's over with.
Yeah, they have their seasons, and at this point in your life, who have you rubbed elbows with? What can you tell our listeners?
In the golf world?
In the golf world.
Well, I did a golf show. I was very fortunate. I did a golf show on TV out of Atlantic City. It was a primetime show. It reached over 2 million people, and it was Par 97. That's where I got the name. So I did over 300 live shows from... Usually it was 7 to 8. For a couple of years, it was 8 to 9. And it reached every system all through South Jersey and some of Pennsylvania. For a year, I did that show up all through the eastern Pennsylvania. And for 1 year, I did it through New York City, like 20 million people. But it was during that time, I interviewed the national president of the PGA, the guy that handed Tiger Woods his PGA trophy when he won the PGA championship. But the great thing, and let me just say one little aside on that, on this was Jack Conley. We used to prime the guests. It was a live show. So my first few shows, everybody was nervous, whatever. So I started taking everybody to the Irish pub. We'd have a drink or two, a cocktail, relax, eat, start talking golf. By the time we had to get on the air, we literally would go over to the station 2 minutes before the show. They had everything ready, and we'd get right on the show and continue the conversation. So I didn't have the national president of the PGA of America, the most important guy in golf. I didn't have him on saying, oh, and yes, bud, we set up the courses in a very professional manner. I had him saying, yeah, bud, and when I started down in golf, I used to hustle the members. I realized, hey, I quit my dishwashing job at the golf course. I realized I can make more money in one day than I did in a month washing dishes by just playing the members for money. So every show was unique, not only in the guests. I had Gary Player, who's a 9-time major champion, get mad at me on the air, something I said, and he got mad and he started calling me Ray Charles, said if I was blind and whatever. And it was good natured. I got to know Gary, but it was so funny. I'm saying, oh man, Gary, you're mad at me, aren't you? You know. And so Gary Player, obviously, I've had personalities from the Golf Channel actually fly in. When I first started doing my show, there was no Golf Channel. So when they started, they were trying to prime areas that the Golf Channel didn't even hit all of South Jersey. So I brought one of their celebrities in, Jerry Foltz, and he came in and did an hour show with me. And it was so funny because he made the mistake in live TV with no delay of we're doing the interview and Jerry's, you know, a little stiff, but I got him loosened up enough. And one of these guys calls from Brigantine Country Club that I know is a character. And he goes, oh, bud, I'm just laying in bed. Well, I say, this is a setup. You know, I know this guy. And this guy, I've known him for 30 years. And he's going to take this somewhere if I don't be careful. So I'm trying to get it around, you know, like where you're playing golf, right?
Right.
Jerry chimes in, like right in the monitor. You're in bed. What are you doing in bed? Because it's only about 7:30. And this guy says, I'm playing with my putter. Well, I mean, you know, that I'm like, uh-oh. Now I look in the screen and poor Jerry Foltz, this guy that's on the Golf Channel, he turns purple. I mean, he... You know, today you watch a primetime show and they do anything. Oh, I mean, you see everything. It's like an R-rated movie was when we were kids, you
right.
know. But back in 97, it still wasn't. So that was more risque than it sounds today, you know, because mm-hmm. today they say every word for everything. So, mm-hmm. but anyway, so he turns purple. This Jerry Foltz. Well, my engineer had gotten a call from Jerry's wife. She had wanted to see the show. He made a tape, sent it to Jerry's wife in Arizona. The wife thought that was so funny when Jerry turns purple. She sent copies to the Golf Channel. I go down to the PGA merchandising show the next year. Here's all these celebrities for the Golf Channel going, Bud Parola, you're a legend. You're a legend down at the Golf Channel. I said, why? What am I a legend? They said, we saw that tape with Foltzy, you know. But there's so many guys, you know, just
yeah,
one
sure.
right after another. Every major pro in the area. I was very fortunate to actually grow up playing golf with the best amateur maybe ever out of South Jersey, Leo Gluding. He calls my show just about every Saturday morning I'm here. And I just played an interview last Saturday with Greg Farrow, who's a local Glassboro boy who made the tour 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've had a chance to have everybody on the show. And
very good.
Yeah.
Tell us about the U.S. Open. It's being held at Marion Country Club in Marion, PA from June.
Well, there's actually a great little quick, I'll make it real quick, backstory on that. The architect... And I do this, like, where I take this and I start backtracking, and then I forget what I was talking about. So if I forget what I'm talking about, just remind me of what your question was. Real quick. Gil Hans is going to be the architect for the 2016 Olympics. They're down in Brazil. The big story was he was hired by the Olympic Committee to go down to Brazil and build a golf course. He brought his family, took his girls out of high school, and he's down there now building a golf course for the 2016 Olympics, which is the first time golf will ever have been in Olympics. He came on my show in 1997 and brought the pro from Marion, Bill Kittleman. Bill Kittleman had been there for 35 years as the head pro, assisted before that. He had hosted four U.S. Opens and a bunch of U.S. amateurs. I asked him on his show in 1997, I said, will the Open ever be at Marion again? He said, Bud, no way. There's not enough room. There's no room for corporate tents. There's no room for people. There's no room for parking. The course can not accommodate it. We're in a room now, whatever, like 15, 12 foot wide. That's the size of the fairways there. When you get to this wall right here is a road. Cars are going by. They're going up to, I don't know what the roads are on Haverford Avenue. I don't know where they're going. On the other side of the course, it's coming the other way. There's no clubhouse. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing there. So when I heard that it was going back to Marion, now, a couple things they've done. They've rented houses, and they've rented a lot of houses. They're putting up some corporate tents there. They've cut the gallery down from 100,000 to 20,000. So if you didn't get a ticket, you know, last year, you are not going to Marion unless you really know somebody or whatever. I don't know where they're parking. They're probably going to be parking in the parking lot here at the WNJC and busing people there. I have no idea where they're going to park. You can't even get through the traffic. I mean, that's the crazy thing. I've covered and I have media credentials for the whole week. I've covered like 10 opens. They're always in areas of wide open spaces and college campus right next to it and all. That area of Marion, you can't go to the Wawa without it taking an hour and a half with the traffic. I can't imagine bringing cars into that. I can't imagine how those buses are going to get to the golf course. But Marion is a tremendous course. The golfer will appreciate this. The first 13 holes, you hit wedge into the green. That's how short they are. The wedge is the shortest club, right?
Right.
If you don't know golf. So the golfers have got a whole new experience where they're used to having a bomb a ball 360 yards and then hit a 5-iron. If they hit a ball 360 yards, they're going to go over the green on a par 4. I mean, these holes are real short. So it's going to be extremely interesting. Real small fairways, thick rough, and small greens, which means when you're in that thick rough, you're not hitting the green. You're going to hit the green. So it's going to be weird. And I have no idea. The only thing I'll predict is the winner, Zach Johnson, hits the ball short, got great wedge play. I think somebody's going to get hot with the wedge. Now, the putters, everybody's going to make every putt they have because the greens are so small. Imagine when these professionals, they don't have the 60-foot putts. They're going to have a 30, 20-foot putt. They can make these putts all day. So it's going to be the guy who gets hot with the wedge and who hits it straight, keeps it in play, and then gets hot with the wedge. He's going to be the one.
And he calls on who that might be?
Zach Johnson, two guys from the past that I think their game has passed them on a little bit. Our local favorite, Jim Furyk from Pennsylvania, he's used to playing these kind of courses, but I think his career, he is a U.S. Open winner from the past, but I think he's getting up there a little bit. Justin Leonard would have been a perfect winner 10 years ago, again, a little older. And Corey Pavin, who won a U.S. Open, he's probably 15 years past his prime. So that's going to be tough. The greatest golfer that ever lived, no questions asked. Take Jack Nicklaus, roll them all together, and this guy's better than every one of them, and that's Tiger Woods. He might win it only because he's so much better than everybody else. If you hit it straight, he can normally hit it straighter. If you hit it far, he hits it further. If you make a long putt, he'll drop it on top of you. You get in trouble, you lose a shot, he chips it in from the rough. I mean, I've seen on film, I have film of all of this in major tournaments that I've been in, and you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, did that ball go in the hole? Like, what? You got to be kidding me.
Well, there's a lot of big names, obviously, that are going to be there.
All
and
of
them. The U.S. Open, Golf U.S. Open, is at the Marion Country Club in Marion, PA, from June 10th to June 16th. And, but individuals that are going to be there, what can they expect that day?
Well, how it works is that Monday, and you may be able to still get a ticket for Monday. That's a practice round. You'll be able to go out and you'll see Tiger Woods hitting 3 and 4 balls off the tee. It's a great time. If you've never seen the pros, it's Monday's great. Tuesday, they'll be a little more intense, but you'll see them. Like, Tiger will go to a green on the practice round and he'll be putting up to the right of the, he'll have a tee in the green, and he'll be putting to that tee, and people go, why is he doing? Well, that's because that's a pin placement one day. So he knows where those pins are going to be. So they'll practice putting. Once they get on the green, they'll spend 15 minutes each day putting to those. Monday will be real relaxed. They're joking. They're throwing stuff. They're hugging the crowd, you know. Tuesday, they're a little bit more serious. By Wednesday, they want to kill you and the people they're with. You know, they're into their game face, you know. And then Thursday, the tournament starts, and it's going to be extreme. It's got to be the most fun. I just saw the press releases from the USGA, who puts this on, and they're going to have coverage from 7 in the morning till after dark.
Wow.
So, and it's going to skip around. It'll be Golf Channel, ESPN, I think NBC or CBS, whatever. But it will be, you literally could sit there and watch golf for 14, 15 hours. It's going to be interesting.
Very interesting. What is the grand finale like on June 16th? How do they end this whole event?
Well, it's amazing. When I was at Bethpage, it was like a rock concert. I mean, Tiger won the Bethpage. This is about 12 years ago, and there's now normally there's 80,000 people on one hole. Now here there's going to be only 20,000 people on one hole. Bethpage could handle 80 better than Marion could handle 20. So it's going to seem like a riot. I mean, people will be pushing. When Payne Stewart, God rest his soul, he won the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. It was my first Open I ever covered, 1997. I was pushed, even as a media guy, so far behind people, I didn't know it was him that won. I thought Phil Mickelson had won. You couldn't tell who was putting. You couldn't see a thing. And we heard the roar, and I turned to my son. I said, Mickelson must have made that chip or something. Wasn't. It was Payne Stewart. But anyway, but that's how it'll be. It'll be so crowded, so whatever. The truth, and what'll happen is the winner will come out through like a rock star. He'll have a space about 3 foot wide to get through with security, and it's just going to be it's going to be spectacular. Let me mention one thing about that. They are so panicked because of this Boston Marathon thing. Marion Police Department, I'm going to give you a figure, but it's going to be close. I just talked to a policeman this morning. It's getting like $2 million extra from the state for, there's going to be a tremendous police presence.
Protection.
And it's kind of sad.
It's necessary. It's necessary.
I mean, do you even think that has to be
Has
to be a part of the finale?
But anyway, Bud, we are out of time.
Oh, great.
And I can't thank you enough for being on the show. It's been
no
wonderful
problem.
Having
it
you
was,
on.
It was great. It was good. A lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And I'm not a golfer. I tried golfing and, you know, the ball ended up hitting a bald man on his head and he was pretty upset.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my son decided to get me out of there very quickly. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
But so golfing I don't do, but I enjoy the game.
Beautiful.
It's fun to watch.
Beautiful. It is. And that'd be the final thing. Watch that Sunday. Well, obviously, you probably don't have a ticket anyway, but you'll have a lot of fun watching it on TV. They'll get good angles, and you'll know who wins.
Very good. Bud, thank you again.
Oh, thank you. Great.
Have a
pleasure
great day.
Being here.
Thank you, Bud.
Same to you.
And we were just speaking with Bud Perillo. And don't forget the U.S. Golf Open, Marion, PA, from June 10th to June 16th. And we are taking a short break, but up next we will be receiving Jude Bijou. And she's going to be my co-host. And we're offering listeners to call in. We're going to talk about fear today and some of the things that are going on around us and how to adapt. So if you'll please just stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me.
Hello and welcome back to WNJC. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Lorraine, and we have with us today a co-host who is going to be working with me during the duration of our show today. Her name is Jude Bijou, and she's the author of Attitude Reconstruction. She was my guest a few weeks back on our show, and I've asked her to come back. She's going to co-host. And as you may have heard in our previous announcements and promotions from last week, the listeners may call in today to speak with Jude and myself, any questions that you may have. And Jude and I are going to, we're going to talk today about some of the marks that she has made in her book, Attitude Reconstruction, talk a little bit about emotions and the character of emotion, etc. And listeners, please feel free to call in. Our number here at the station is 856-232-7078. So please do call in, questions, comments, advice. Jude, welcome to WNJC Heart to Heart. How are you today?
I'm just fine, Susan. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You're welcome. And Jude, I'm going to ask you, is there anything particular you'd like to start off with today? Any comments to start our show? And we'll just discuss that topic as we go and invite listeners to be calling in.
Well, I think that the most important thing is to understand that in this book that I've written, Attitude Reconstruction, it really demystifies all of what I call our five tools, our emotions, our thoughts, our intuition, how we communicate, our speech, and what we do, our actions, so that there's a very practical system that will that is based on emotions, that shows how to go from sadness, anger, and fear to more joy, love, and peace.
And I really like that because, you know, the whole nature of our soul and our spirit really is joy, love, and peace. And it's so hard, you know, so many people experience so many trials in their lives, and they find it very hard to get back to that centered place to experience and really feel and know that there's joy there. And, you know, Jude, you're a therapist, and you have clients that come to you, and, you know, I'm a therapist as well. I want to ask you, what do you find in your practice? What type of population, or should I really say, what type of emotion seems to be a major trigger or factor for people?
Well,
they want to
what
come
I
to
have
for.
Found is that really that we only have six emotions, and emotions are really, if we think about it, energy in motion, emotion. And so each is a very different sensation in our body. And so the ones that give us trouble are sadness, anger, and fear, because we don't allow ourselves to express them very naturally, very physically, very constructively. So they get clogged in our body, and that's what really obscures going back to that those feelings of joy, love, and peace.
Yeah, it is a difficult place, and I don't know if you heard in the news, well, everyone has heard about the Boston incident and the killings and, you know, the two young men that were involved. Under all those emotions and whatever triggered those young men to behave in that fashion, what do you find? What tells you in your gut and in your from your experience, what did you see as the main issue with those two personalities?
Well, all of the emotions are involved, but again, there's a lot of anger. That would be the first thing. With anger, we want to strike out. We want to hurt. We want to destroy. And that's that hot energy that goes out, whether we're verbally wanting to destroy somebody or physically wanting to or emotionally. They're all different ways that we're not taking care of that anger in a constructive way, and we're putting it out on other people and things. And this is really the primary thing, is that these men, and really with all acts of violence, the basis is this unexpressed anger in a constructive way. Now, that's not to say that there's not also a ton of sadness and a ton of fear, but it's really the anger that's expressing itself, that people are giving themselves permission to express that anger in very destructive ways.
You said something very important that I totally agree with, and it is the opportunity of expression. I have found over the years in treating that many individuals, some of the core elements of why they don't express themselves as an adult or even as a child is because the environment or the way they're directed or not directed, they are not given or taught that opportunity of how to express. And I often encourage parents to sit with their children and allow them to speak about their feelings. Don't criticize them. Allow them to learn early that it is okay to speak of how you feel, because we have to honor ourself. We have to honor that core centered self of who we are. And we have to really nurture and nourish our spirit inside. And these elements of fear and sadness and anger, they do sit in the system. Part of the work that I do is I hear where the illness comes from. A lot of this negative energy, as you call it, and negative emotion, it does feed. It sits in the cells. It stays in the body, and it permeates chronic symptoms that can turn into illness. And Jude, in your experience, when you have an individual that's very sick and they come to you and they're struggling with anger, they're struggling with the fear, the sadness, what do you find most helpful in directing them into a better path, into a path of peacefulness?
Well, it's what you'd say. It's not just that we have to give ourselves and our children permission to talk about their emotions. We need to give them a place, a safe place, to express it. So I go, because attitude reconstruction is such a natural, intuitively calming system, it's like, what did we do when we were children before we got all of those messages that say, don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about, don't be a sissy, don't be a scaredy cat, you know, girls aren't pretty when they're angry. Before we got those messages, a child naturally expressed that anger. They cried when they were sad, and they had a temper tantrum. They flopped down on the floor, and they kicked and screamed, and then they were back to being present. What we have is we have all those messages that at a very young age we were told it's not okay to express them, and that's where we start getting into our head and making some very wrong assumptions. So what I do is I encourage parents, as well as what parents can teach their children, to find a safe place to move that energy, because it's just energy, not words, it's just energy in the body. So oftentimes clients will come back, oh, Jude, I need another appointment. I'm just feeling so angry. And maybe they don't get it out on their own, but it's really very easy to do. But they'll come in. What I have is I have big stacks of old phone books and a flexible plastic tube, and just say, go at it. And people just pound and pound and pound on these phone books, so nobody's getting hurt. And they're moving that energy out of the body, and it makes a loud noise, and pages are flying, and it feels so good. And so it's moving that energy out. But if you don't go, oh, I couldn't do that with a phone book, there's a lot of other ways. You can just, like, push against a wall or a door jamb. Just really, really hard, make them, move that energy out of the body. Keep going over and over, but while you're emoting, while you're expressing the emotion, it's so important that you don't think those really destructive thoughts. You don't go, how could they do that, and I don't believe it, and they're not okay. It's just, I just feel angry, because we don't even know. We have so much anger that we've stored up, and so much sadness, and so much
fear. People
so
really
it's letting,
need
giving ourselves permission, so then we can give our children permission to move those emotions out in a physical way.
That's very important, and you know, people need to be validated. It doesn't matter where we are or who we are. Everyone really does need to be heard and to be validated. And, you know, through the years, through my years of practice, and just growth as an individual, just in the world itself, I see more and more anger today, more than ever. It's just unbelievable, the frustration that individuals have and the pinned-up anger that they have. There is some under that anger, I have found, there is so much fear. There's so much fear and sadness. And also, in my practice, the way I work, it might be a little different than yours, Jude. I encompass a spiritual element into it. Some people call it the universe. I call it God. I call it the angels. And in that aspect, I have to say that our core of who we are and how we were created out of love. And I think over time, because of life experience, because of neglect, because of abuse, you know, our system, our mind and our thoughts have totally gotten off kilter and we've kind of lost our sense and our path. But what it comes down to is a lot of self-validation. And in order for us to be centered within ourselves, we really have to search and seek deeply. We have to seek deeply who we are. I tell my patients, I often see in sessions, I see angels, I see the frame of angels. I see orbs, colored orbs. That might sound scary to people, but it shouldn't, because we were all created. We're all created from God, and we all have a spirit in us. And, this is a place where we have to really, really look at who we are as an individual and remember that we were created out of love. Love is really the key to all the answers that we're all seeking. And Jude, I have to ask you, do you find that when individuals come to you that they're seeking all their answers on the outside as opposed to going inside? What has been your experience?
Yes, that's right. We are outward focused, and actually the anger takes our focus outward onto people and things. But I want to go back to what you said right at the beginning, and that is, it's not only are we experiencing and seeing a huge increase in anger in our society, but we also have an incredible amount of fear. We're afraid of whether we're going to have enough money. We're going to be afraid that our partner might leave us. We're going to be afraid we might succeed or fail. We don't know about the uncertainty of, like, is there going to be a war or something, some catastrophe is going to happen. We have so much pent-up fear as well that also is keeping us from being able to get in touch with these emotions of joy, love, and peace. And the opposite of fear is peace. So the more, I would say in this case, that we allow ourselves to shake and shiver, really like a dog at the vet. What does an animal do, or what do we do when the body is in shock? It naturally shivers and shakes to move out that fear energy. And then we can look more into our heart. Then we can make better decisions. Then we can think more clearly. Then we can cope with what's going on.
Isn't it amazing that once we settle and once we calm ourselves, that we can be more rational? And isn't it interesting how some people aren't quite sure how to do that? And I'd like to share methods with you, Jude, and talk about some methods to give to the listeners. How do you help individuals to get still? What type of directives do you offer?
Well, it can be, there's several things, but the first is because exactly the emotions you're talking about is fear and peace. So the more, even though it's going to feel so silly, it also will feel so good because it happens so quickly. If I just get up, maybe put some music on or go into a bathroom and allow myself to shake and shiver up my back and making little noises and out my arms and in my legs and just getting goofy and moving that energy out really hard for like 1 minute, 1 or 2 minutes, and then we find that we can shift the physiology so simply just by honoring the emotion like that.
Yes.
Now, some people say, oh, I don't want to do that, blah, 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 for many, all those reasons it would be silly and all that, but I say try it because it really, really works. But if somebody doesn't want to, or you're not in a situation where you can, at that moment, express that fear, What you can do is you can work with it in your thinking. Because what happens when we have a lot of fear is we go to those always and nevers and way into the future. What if this is going to happen? And what is this? And overwhelm. All of these different ways where the mind, instead of being peaceful and calm, is way into the future based on the past and making these big global everybody, everything. You always do it. You never. So what we can do to also help to pacify fear and feel more peace is to keep reeling our mind back in over and over, just going, stay specific, one thing at a time, one thing at a time. Everything's going to be okay. I can handle it one thing at a time. Stay specific. Just deal with what's in the present right now. So you're combating those old thoughts that only increase the fear by reminding yourself, one thing at a time, one thing at a time.
You know, that's a very, very important what you just said about past and present, because we are all in a society where everything is moving so quickly. Everyone has an agenda every day and a routine, and everyone is trying to keep up with their routines. And at the same time, we're in a world where we're dealing with a lot of other people, and they have routines and agendas, et cetera, et cetera. So we wake up in the morning and we know what we need to do and where we need to be, but then all of these other elements start to hit at us from different sides. Things come up we don't expect. We have to change our plan, adjust our schedule. Things don't work out. And we get frustrated. We get angry. We get upset. And it might be on top of already being upset about whatever issue at hand. And a lot of individuals come to me and clients will say, what I hear in therapeutic sessions is what you said about past and present. They are holding the past, they're running into the future, but they're not stopping and being present about where they are. What I generally do in my sessions is bring individuals first to a place of calm, and then we go through and look at what from the past is nudging and pulling at them. I bring a lot of prayer into my sessions because it's part of who I am and it's part of my work, but I can hear their spirit. I can hear what it's calling out. And I hear a lot of individuals reflecting back on the past. They're holding so much pain and so much fear and anger from circumstances and events of the past. And I like what you said about the present, Jude, because it's true. We all have to stop, take a deep breath, and stay in the present moment. The present moment is where and how, if you want to call it spirit, you want to call it God, the angels, that's where they do their work. That's where they do their infinite work. That's where things start to change and turn. But it is our nature as humans to hold on to what has happened, and at the same time, we try to leap forward. So I agree with you about stopping and being in the present. A lot of times what I'll do with patients is tell them, every single night before you go to bed, write down what you need to do the next day. Look over your list. Prepare your mind. Do some deep breathing. Get yourself centered. Allow yourself to relax and allow yourself to process what the next day, what you need to do. And then you allow yourself to do the breath work, to calm, you go to sleep, and the next day you will be amazed at how your system and your mind, as you call energy emotion, has regenerated itself and turned over. You're more refreshed, and when you're refreshed and you're calm and you're still, things go much more smoothly and they go more quickly. Jude, what comments do you have for individuals out there who may have known individuals from the Boston incident and they've lost loved ones and there's a lot of pain and a lot of grieving for these individuals? Do you have any thoughts for these individuals?
Absolutely. The most important thing, it goes back to the same theme. We have to honor the emotions, and there is so much sadness. Oh, no matter where you live, if you lived in Boston, if you were directly affected, or whether you live in California, or no matter where, there is so much sadness about what happened, as well as anger, and then it spawns more fear. But I say, cry, that people who have been directly affected in one way or another need to really tell their worries, tell their thoughts about it, and do the emotional work, which means cry while you're telling that. Don't try to hold it all in and say, I'm going to move through that. That won't work. That's how we keep getting that backlog of all those things in the past. We really need to process those emotions. So there is so much anger about something like that. How, because it's such a violation, it's such an injustice. So it's like we need to find a way where we can move that energy out to deal with the anger of what happened. And we also have to deal with the fear, because it really triggers all of us to what might happen next. Again, we're so in the future rather than I've got to shake about that. I've got to cry a ton. We don't get over it in a day or a week or even a month. These are huge traumas, and people need to be given the space and the permission to talk about it and express those emotions if they really want to heal.
You're absolutely right. There's something that I've been hearing recently from different individuals. I have heard this over and over again, that they are hearing a lot about, I'm sure you've heard it, Angelina Jolie was talking about her experience, the scare of breast cancer, and, you know, being proactive with some of her choices. And I've had a lot of people say to me that they were very frightened by that because the idea of having a double mastectomy. Now, there's a lot of different places of discipline and thought out there, but I'm a healer. I work from a place of healing, and with me it's by the power of spirit, the Holy Spirit. And I've turned people's systems over physiologically, and they have come out of their place of cancer. So before you get frightened and get scared and think that, you know, you've got to remove a limb, you got to remove your breast, you know, whatever the case may be, give a call, because I too suffered from cancer and told that nothing could be done but to have things removed. And there truly, truly is such a thing as you can heal. It doesn't matter what is going on. You can heal. And Jude, what is your position? What do you think about the influences of people today, all the things going on, and they're very fearful? I don't know if you hear of it in your practice. I hear a great deal. People come to me about what they hear in the news, and they're so fearful. What they hear about our medical system, and they're so fearful. What is your place of thought on that?
Well, I had a client just a couple of days ago, and she was at the point of having panic attacks and just really not being able to function very well, and wanted to avoid taking medication. And so I said, well, what are those things that are bothering you? What is it? And there were a couple of things. One is that that her half-brother was getting out of prison in 2.5 years. And she had agreed that he could come and live with her and her husband. And that was concerning her. And the other thing was that there were so many changes going on at her business that she didn't know if she would renew the lease and how many people would leave and so on. And so that was worrying her. And then I said, well, let's talk about what's a reasonable time frame to start to worry about those things. And until then, let's not, because that's your half-brother, a year and a 2.5 years from now. Stop it. Maybe a year or maybe 6 months, then you can start to do that. But you have to separate out, because the fear will just take us over and find anything to grasp on, where it's like we just need to give our minds those instructions, like, I'll deal with it later. I'll deal with it when it's time. The same with her lease. She had no way to know if other people were going to be leaving and taking other jobs or not. So it was like, until you get there, until a reasonable time beforehand when you need to really make decisions, interrupt those thoughts. And you know, like you say, turn it over to God. Turn it over to being in the present. I'll handle the future in the future. I'll handle the future in its time.
It's very interesting, but a lot of patients say to me, you're so calm, Dr. Susan, how do you do it? And I tell them it's very simple. I pray. I pray a lot. And everyone has a different way of prayer. But it's very crucial because it really does help you to get to a really calm, calm place. And it really helps you to get centered. And it's so important, as you said, Jude, about not trying to take everything on. There's a reasonable time. And I also want to mention to listeners, there is such a thing as divine timing. When you are very still and when you stay in the present moment, things really do unfold and they do get easier. And what happens is your spirit calms. Your spirit reaches a place of settledness. The Holy Spirit can really move in you and do some incredible healing work when you really learn how to be still. I teach you how to be still, and I teach you how to hear what you need to hear. And when we are very, very still, things begin to make more sense. We can rationalize much better. And there's a lot of individuals out there listening who may not be able to afford having professional therapy. However, do make sure that you know, if you really find yourself a really good friend or someone that you can go to really sit and open up with and talk with, who's a really good listener. They won't criticize. They'll listen, and they'll give you support. They'll give you a lot of hugs, and they'll let you cry, and they'll let you share. I have found that many patients, before they found me, have said that they had a really good friend. And depending on what the issues were, the friends would say, you know, you really do need to reach out further. I'm still here for you. However, I'm not a professional. You do need more help. But for individuals who need to have someone and they're not quite sure which way to go, that would be a solution. The other solution is you have Jude Bijou, and she is the author of Attitude Reconstruction. And she was the daughter of a pioneering behavioral child psychologist, Sidney W. Bijou. And Jude is a licensed marriage and family therapist, professional educator. And she has this incredible book. And I have read this book. I have to tell you, it's very, very well written. And it exercises, it focuses on the prime elements of emotion. And although our practices are a little different, it's still the same philosophy, the same foundation. So you can reach out to Jude. You can reach her. And Jude, how will our listeners get in touch with you if they would like to reach you?
The easiest way is through my website, which is attitudereconstruction.com. And what a person can find there is right on the opening page, you can take a questionnaire, a quick quiz, and really pinpoint those kind of destructive core attitudes that we have taken on that keep you from feeling the joy, love, and peace, so that you can pinpoint what's holding you back. And then very simple suggestions. You can go to a link that was, oh, if fear is your strongest emotion and you're doing these kind of things, go here, and you'll have very practical tips. Or if anger, go here. So you can do a self-assessment there by going to the website, as well as reading blogs and articles and seeing videos and so on. But I really go that the most important thing is to move that energy. Just take a few minutes and try it. Have that good cry. Do that shaking and shivering. Then you can hear your prayers. Then you can be in the present and feel more calm. Deal with the emotions first, and then you can move in the direction that you want.
Very good. Jude, I want to thank you so much for co-hosting with me today. It's been a real pleasure. I thank you so much for all your sharing, and I wish you the very best, and we will talk soon. I want to thank you again for joining me today on Heart to Heart.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And listeners, I just want to share with you that you really, really can heal. There is nothing out there that you cannot defeat or overcome. I am a survivor of a neuromuscular disease, RSD, reflex symptomatic dystrophy. It is a very real disease. It is very painful. The inflammation is beyond endurance. The pain is beyond understanding. End-stage liver disease and cancer. and I've truly been through every level of pain and healing, and everything that I learned and everything that I was taught and everything that I've been graced with as far as spiritual gifts, I put into my practice. I've healed by myself. And I have to tell you that there is nothing that you cannot do without prayer, without faith and perseverance. There is nothing you cannot conquer or achieve. I don't care how dim it may look or what you've been told or what the world says. The world is the world, and it ever changes, but God never changes. He is ever present. We have spirit within us, and underneath the anger, the fear, and the sadness, the spirit is trying to emerge. I teach my patients how to let go of that fear, how to heal the past, how to forgive yourself, which is key. Forgive others, and you will find your path of transformation. To reach me, you can get in touch with me at 610-551-9508, 484-318-9419. You can also go online to my website, Dr. Susan Lorraine. I do have many programs for those that are struggling financially and are in desperate need of counseling and therapeutic intervention. Thank you for being with us today. God bless you all, and just pray.
Renaissance Radio Station, WNJC, 1360 AM, Washington Township, Philadelphia. Broadcasting online, WNJC1360.com. A service of Forsyth Broadcasting.